Okay, here we go with the reading of today's Wall Street Journal for this Thursday, the 5th of February, 2026. And we say hello on this Thursday to Ken.
Hello and welcome. Tech sell-off propels NASDAQ to its worst 2 days in months. Wall Street rotates out of AI leaders into real economy companies' stocks. Wall Street's software jitters are turning into an AI slump. Declines in tech stocks intensified Wednesday, spreading from software to semiconductor shares and other companies linked to the infrastructure build-out for artificial intelligence. The NASDAQ composite posted consecutive 1% declines for the first time since April tariff chaos. The moves rattled investors already unnerved by the recent pullback in software stocks that accelerated after the startup Anthropic unveiled a suite of new tools which can perform industry-specific functions like reviewing legal contracts. Traders are worried that the impact of AI could be more widespread than initially thought, and, at the same time, that the companies in a technological arms race might fall short of delivering the sky-high profits many are hoping for. Investors continued a weeks-long trend of rotating dollars out of long-time stock market superstars, such as chip stocks and the big tech giants, while funneling funds into more traditionally unloved corners of the market. On Wednesday, they plugged money into companies more directly linked to an economy that is showing signs of accelerating growth, pushing up shares of firms ranging from Eli Lilly to Old Dominion Freight Line and MGM Resorts International. 7 of 11 S&P 500 sectors ended Wednesday in the green. The energy, materials, and consumer staples sectors are all up by at least 12% this year. The Dow Jones Industrial Average on Wednesday gained 0.5%, or 260 points. The S&P 500 finished down 0.5%, with 92 stocks setting new 52-week intraday highs, the highest volume of such milestones in a single session since November 2024. Wednesday's NASDAQ slide was broader than the software-specific rout that rattled markets Tuesday. Chipmaker Advanced Micro Devices skidded 17% after a disappointing earnings report to notch its worst day since 2017. Palantir shares dropped 12%. Data storage company SanDisk lost 16%. Traders said Wednesday's selling was orderly and showed few signs of panic, but some investors said the rally that pushed major indexes to repeated records in recent months has carried prices of some stocks to eye-watering levels, leaving them vulnerable to outsized swings. With valuations where they are, market reactions are going to be pretty harsh, said Jack Ablin, chief investment strategist at Crescent Capital. Expectations right now are very, very high. The sell-off in software as service stocks also swept up several AI giants Wednesday, weighing down their shares. Meta has retreated 6.6% this week, while NVIDIA slid 8.9%. Michael Anatoly, a market strategist for Baird Private Wealth Management, said that likely reflected traders shifting positions rather than rethinking their broader market outlook. What does NVIDIA have to do with SaaS, he said. People are selling some of their winners to fund some of their software carnage. The pain has spread beyond the stock market, driving down prices of software company loans in recent days. As of Tuesday, the average price of software company loans was 91.27 cents on the dollar, down from 94.71 cents at the end of last year, according to PitchBook LCD. At the end of January, the extra yield or spread that investors demand to hold software loans over a benchmark short-term interest rate had jumped to 5.95 percentage points from 4.78 percentage points at the end of December. Some $25 billion of software loans were traded at distressed levels, below 80 cents on the dollar at the end of January, up from $11 billion a month earlier. That accounted for nearly a third of all distressed loans. AI adoption is still at an early stage for many companies, but software companies are particularly exposed. We are now in an environment where the sector isn't just guilty until proven innocent, but is now being sentenced before trial, J.P. Morgan Chase analyst Toby Ogg wrote in a Wednesday note. Bouts of volatility have rocked various sectors in recent months after new AI advancements pushed investors to reevaluate companies facing potential disruption. A former trader, Baird's Anatoly, warned that the pullback from software stocks could already be overwrought. Uber says expansion is adding customers. Profit falls in latest quarter, though, and shares fall. Company names a new CFO. Uber Technologies continues to gain customers at a fast clip thanks to ongoing geographic and product expansions, which executives say will fuel growth for years to come. The ride-hailing company also on Wednesday named Balaji Krishnamurthy as its next finance chief, succeeding Parashthas Mathiraja, who will step down from the company February 16th. And I'd like to apologize for my pronunciation of those names. Uber's fourth quarter trips increased 22% from a year ago to 3.8 billion, with an 18% rise in monthly active platform customers. Overall gross bookings were also up 22% to $54.1 billion, fueled by double-digit percentage growth across both its mobility and delivery businesses. Shares fell 5.2% in Wednesday's trading after the company reported a sharply lower profit in its latest quarter, hurt by large charge tied to its equity investments. Uber said it is gaining new customers nearly twice as fast in suburban and rural markets compared with densely populated urban markets as the company continues to add drivers in new geographic regions. There's a lot of runway in front of us still, incoming finance chief Krishnamurthy said on a call with analysts. He added, Uber continues to benefit from its pricing strategy, which targets both higher and lower income consumers. Lower priced products, including the company's recently introduced Wait and Save option, are seeing strong momentum, and the same can be said of higher priced products such as Uber XXL. It has also helped that Uber has held all its prices relatively consistent over the past year. Krishnamurthy joined Uber in 2019, having since held a variety of leadership positions, including Vice President of Strategic Finance and Head of Investor Relations. Krishnamurthy is well known and respected by Wall Street, J.P. Morgan analysts said, making him well positioned to succeed Maharendra Raja. Maharendra Raja said he was presented with a new opportunity over the holidays that will allow him to serve America and give back to the country that has given me and my family so much. He will stay with Uber through July 1st, serving as a senior finance advisor and helping to ensure a successful and seamless transition, the company said. Looking ahead, Uber said its free cash flow generation provides room for the company to invest in advancing its autonomous vehicle ambitions, expecting to be in 15 cities by the end of the year. AVs represent a multi-trillion dollar opportunity, and Uber is currently partnering with NVIDIA to collect data to help drive the adoption of AVs. That data, combined with the advanced simulation capabilities that many of Uber's partners are developing, should result in a very fast roadmap to AV readiness for many, many players, Chief Executive Dara Khosrowshahi said. For the current quarter, Uber forecasts gross bookings of $52 billion to $53.5 billion, ahead of Wall Street models for $51.5 $39 billion. However, the company's adjusted earnings outlook of 65 cents a share to 72 cents a share missed analyst views for 75 cents a share. For its 3 months ended December 31st, Uber posted a profit of $296 million, or 14 cents a share, compared with $6.88 billion, or $3.21 a share a year earlier. The recent quarter included a $1.6 billion net headwind from revaluations of Uber's equity investments. Stripping out certain one-time items, earnings were 71 cents a share. Analysts surveyed by FactSet had expected adjusted earnings of 85 cents a share. Revenue jumped 20% to $14.37 billion, just ahead of the $14.32 billion that Wall Street had modeled. Washington Post cuts one-third of staff as it retools. The Washington Post is cutting one-third of its staff, slashing hundreds of jobs across the newsroom and other departments in an effort to trim costs and reshape coverage. The layoffs will affect journalists in nearly all news departments, including the sports, foreign, technology, and breaking news teams, as well as business and technology staff. If we are to thrive, not just endure, we must reinvent our journalism and our business model with renewed ambition, executive editor Matt Murray wrote in a note to newsroom staff Wednesday. The Post and many other publications have struggled to find a sustainable business model as readers' news consumption habits change and web traffic wanes. Murray said the restructuring is intended to make the Post more flexible and provide audiences with more relevant content. In an interview, Murray declined to say how many of the cuts were coming in from the newsroom. The Post is closing its sports department, but will retain some roles in that coverage area. It is shrinking its international coverage and will focus on national news and features, investigations, and advice on health and wellness topics. Murray said the Post will continue to have correspondents in about a dozen international locations and will focus on issues related to national security. That's what our readers seem to respond to the most, he said. The Post also will restructure its metro section, closing its books section, and suspend its Post Reports podcast. Murray said in his note to staff that the Post's video department hasn't kept up with changes in how consumers get their information, and noted the publication's daily story count has fallen in recent years. And even as we produce much excellent work, we too often write from one perspective, for one slice of the audience, he said. The Post lost $77 million in 2023 and $100 million in 2024. The Wall Street Journal previously reported. The company said Wednesday that organic search traffic has fallen by nearly half in the past 3 years. Publisher William Lewis aims to have the Post break even by the end of 2026, according to a Post spokesperson. The paper's owner, Jeff Bezos, tapped Lewis, former chief executive of journal publisher Dow Jones, in late 2023 to spearhead a turnaround. Murray, a former journal editor-in-chief, joined in 2024. The Post has conducted multiple rounds of buyouts and layoffs in recent years. The paper faced immense backlash in 2024 after Bezos pulled a pre-written endorsement of then-Vice President Kamala Harris just before the presidential election. Within days, it lost more than 250,000 subscriptions. SpaceX seeks early inclusion in indexes. Elon Musk's SpaceX is seeking an early boost for shares after the rocket and satellite business makes its stock market debut later this year. Advisors for the company, which recently merged with XAI, have reached out to major index providers, including NASDAQ, to discuss how SpaceX and this year's other hot startups might join key indexes sooner than normal, according to people familiar with the matter. Companies typically must wait several months or a year after their public debut before gaining inclusion in a major index such as the S&P 500 or the NASDAQ 100. Inclusion unlocks access to retail and institutional capital from funds, particularly those mimicking the performance of indexes that have to hold the companies in the index. The traditional waiting period is intended to give the companies time to demonstrate that they are stable and liquid enough to handle extensive buying from index funds. SpaceX hopes to skirt traditional rules in an effort to bring liquidity to its shareholders sooner as part of its planned IPO. SpaceX advisors have sought index policy changes that would fast-track its entry into major indexes for the company and benefit other highly valued private companies, the people said. Last valued at $800 billion, SpaceX is targeting a valuation of more than $1 trillion, a listing that would become the largest ever U.S. IPO. SpaceX and AI startups OpenAI and Anthropic are expected to list as soon as this year, which could be a banner stretch for IPOs, some bankers say. Finding a stable investor base will be important to their long-term success as publicly traded stocks. Conversations between the rocket makers' advisors and indexes are part of a broader industry-wide discussion about ways to get investors in buzzy startups access to liquidity from public markets earlier. Investors and advisors to companies planning to go public this year are concerned not only about initial trading, but also that the standard 6-month lockup period, which prevents early investors, executives, and employees from selling their stock, might prompt significant selling that pressures shares. After Meta went public in 2012, shares sank when early investors unloaded all at once. SpaceX is exploring ways to better balance supply and demand to avoid that outcome, some of the people said. Advocates of index methodology changes have said that by allowing newly public companies earlier entry to key indexes, individual investors who have missed out on the big gains in private markets could secure earlier exposure via popular exchange-traded funds and index funds. Earlier this week, the NASDAQ stock market shares proposal to update some of the NASDAQ 100 index methodology and ask for feedback from market participants. Among the proposals is a potential fast entry process. Under this option, companies whose market capitalization ranks in the top 40 of the NASDAQ's 100 constituents could be added to the indexes after 15 trading days. Companies typically now must wait at least 3 months to be added to the index. At their current valuations, SpaceX, OpenAI, and Anthropic would all qualify. The S&P Total Market Index and MSCI indexes have fast-track options, which some advisors to SpaceX are also exploring to ensure the IPO trades well, some of the people familiar with the matter said. The one index where there is no fast entry option is the S&P 500. To join the index, a company must be U.S.-based, profitable, and have a market capitalization of at least $22.7 billion. Theme Park Insider, Key to Disney's Future. Soon after Bob Iger returned to Walt Disney in late 2022, Experiences Chairman Josh D'Amaro went to the chief executive's office with a book of data on the businesses he led. Theme parks and cruise ships were constrained only by their size. Guests were spending ever more during their visits. At home, the next generation of Disney fans was abandoning traditional media to spend their time with video games and virtual worlds. Within about a year, Disney had committed to nearly doubling its investments in its parks and cruise ships to $60 billion over the next decade. It also invested $1.5 billion in Fortnite maker Epic Games. The moves were a coup for D'Amaro. but they were topped on Tuesday when he was named the next CEO of the storied 102-year-old entertainment company. The plan he successfully pitched 3 years ago gives a strong indication of where he will take America's best-known entertainment brand when he officially takes over next month, according to people close to him. DeMauro, 54 years old, won the top job over Disney Entertainment co-chairman Dana Walden, who was named president and chief creative officer. People inside and close to the company saw their horse race as a contest for the soul of Disney between real world versus on-screen entertainment. Experiences have accounted for most of Disney's profits since 2022, but movies and television shows create the stories and characters that draw people to visit parks, sail on cruise ships, and buy toys. DeMauro will have to learn the business Walden oversees as Disney's first CEO since the early 1980s with no experience in television or film. Few power players in Hollywood know him well. He is also the first person in the top job who has run one of the company's individual theme parks and worked overseas. The newly appointed CEO, according to people who have worked with him, possesses the charisma and confidence of Iger and the hard-nosed, profit-oriented finance focus of Bob Chapek, who was CEO from 2020 to 2022. He is a competitive athlete who paddleboarded when based in Florida and plays basketball with colleagues at corporate off-sites. I've seen him move from a guest in the park to A-list Hollywood talent to a cast member in a restaurant, and he has the ability to make them all feel special, said Virgin Galactic CEO Michael Colglazier, who left Disney in 2020 after serving as president of its international parks. Disney employs about 231,000 people known as cast members, most of whom work at the parks. A potential downside of his people skills, some who have worked with him said, is that DeMauro likes to be liked and can avoid taking unpopular stands. Disney's board chairman, James Gorman, said in an emailed statement that DeMauro's decisiveness and clear thinking were among the traits that impressed the board when it selected him as CEO. Under his leadership, Disney has been criticized by fans for price increases and policy changes that make its theme parks less affordable for middle-class families. Behind the scenes, DeMauro looked for ways to get more money from wealthier visitors and maintain cheaper options for people willing to come on weekdays or wait in longer lines, people who worked with him said. The best word for what Josh does is optimization, said Jim McPhee, who retired as chief operating officer of Walt Disney World in 2021. He focuses on how to extract the most value. Disney shareholders will be looking for DeMauro to generate value for them after 5 years in which it has significantly underperformed the broader market. Among the headwinds it is facing is a decline in foreign visitors to its U.S. theme parks. He will also have to navigate a difficult political environment for the company, which has clashed with the Trump administration over late-night host Jimmy Kimmel, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis over LGBTQ rights, and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, an independent, over employee wages. Unlike Iger and Walden, both Democrats, DeMauro is a registered independent whose recent political donations have been to Disney corporate PAC. The Massachusetts native studied art at Skidmore College before concluding it wouldn't set him up for career success. He transferred to Georgetown, where he got a degree in business. After 6 years at razor company Gillette, he took a business planning job at Disneyland in 1998. He quickly developed an expertise in the pricing market and logistics that makes theme parks work. He got the attention of senior executives in 2010 when he took over a moribund money-losing travel division called Adventures by Disney. When he moved on 3 years later, it was turning a profit. Colleagues credit his success at Adventures and future postings running with the Animal Kingdom theme park, Disneyland, and Walt Disney World to his ability to energize cast members and to get to know guests. He spoke to Walt Disney World visitors in their homes as part of a project to find out what changes they wanted to see. One result of the effort? Improved service at the resort's hotels. Rallying the team. At Animal Kingdom, many cast members were skeptical of plans to add a land-based on the Avatar movies to a park focused on wildlife. Josh didn't just recognize the value of the new land, but of rallying the team around the why behind it, said McPhee. He cared about commitment, not compliance. Colleagues say DeMauro has tried to increase profits by charging more on the busiest days and for shorter lightning lines in lieu of across-the-board price hikes. While the most expensive one-day ticket at Disneyland has soared to $224, plus as much as $449 for a Lightning Lane Premier Pass, DeMauro has kept the lowest entry price at $104 since 2019. Josh was always very mindful and sensitive to having entry-level affordability, especially for young families, said Catherine Powell, who previously oversaw Disney's theme parks in the U.S. and Europe and is now CEO of AMA Waterways River Cruises. DeMauro often returns to what business decisions mean for Disney customers. The best finance people will realize you're doing something for the brand, you're doing something for the families, and ultimately will come back to you, he told Georgetown University's student newspaper, The Hoya, last year. His reluctance to take decisive stands has at times caused tension with colleagues, according to people familiar with the matter. After Iger returned to CEO toured Disneyland and told DeMauro Tomorrowland looked out of date and was hurting the company's reputation. Disney's Imagineers started whipping up designs, but Disneyland executives worried estimated costs ranging from $500 million to $1.5 billion weren't worth it, some of the people said. DeMauro went back and forth on the issue for years, spending millions of dollars to develop different ideas. On past costly parks projects, like an overhaul of California Adventure, Disney executives have had to decide whether to take a risk when the economic case wasn't clear. Tomorrowland still hasn't been updated, and there is no plan to do so as part of the $60 billion parks investment. Imagineers, who design every ship, theme park, and restaurant for the company, have given DeMauro his most direct experience managing creative talent. In 2023, he brought back a respected veteran to run Walt Disney Imagineering and revive morale battered by layoffs and budget scrutiny. Pseudo-credibility, pseudo-celebrity. That team is the busiest it has been in decades, building new attractions based on Monsters, Inc. and The Lion King, designing a new theme park in Abu Dhabi, and nearly doubling the size of the company's cruise line. DeMauro is a frequent visitor to Epic Games headquarters in North Carolina, where developers are working on a Disney virtual world. He championed using Epic's Unreal Engine to speed development across the company, including an update to a Millennium Falcon ride based on the coming Mandalorian and Grogu Star Wars film. Besides Iger and producers, including Marvel's Kevin Feige, DeMauro is one of Disney's best-known public faces. He maintains a popular account on Instagram where he gives his 173,000 followers a more casual look behind the scenes than they are used to from Disney, tightly controlled publicity machine. When DeMauro unveiled a slew of plans for the parks at the company's D23 fan convention in 2024, he got a rock star-sized reception. Within a year of being at Disneyland, He became this pseudo-celebrity people stop and ask for selfies, said Gavin Doyle, who runs the fan site MickeyVisit.com. Excuse me. Rembrandt nets nearly $18 million at auction. A tiny chalk drawing of a recumbent lion by Rembrandt sold for $17.9 million on Wednesday, the latest sign that the art market is roaring back following a years-long slump. Rembrandt's Young Lion Resting smashed the Dutch master's $3.7 million record for a work on paper and now ranks as one of the priciest drawings ever sold at auction. The overall auction high bar for any drawing is still held by Raphael, whose drawings have sold at auction for around $48 million a couple of times over the years, most recently 14 years ago with the sale of a young apostle. Sotheby's strong result for the Young Lion this early in the art market spring season could serve as a broader signal of the art market's overall recovery since sales first perked up last fall following several downturn years. Or it could simply indicate that collectors feel safer splurging on a household name artist like Rembrandt, a Renaissance man famed for his pensive, realistic self-portraits in earthen hues. Christie's will test Michelangelo's draftsmanship by offering up his estimated $1.5 million preparatory drawing of a foot with ties to the Sistine Chapel on Thursday. Young Lion measures only about 4.5 inches tall, but Rembrandt used black chalk and white gouache to render it in minute detail. He is depicted relaxing, but the intensity of his gaze gives it a menacing feel, said Gregory Rubenstein, Sotheby's head of Old Masters Drawings. Animals were rare in Rembrandt's oeuvre. Excuse me. His surviving notebooks contain about 15 sketches of animals, from ordinary pigs and horses to exotic species such as elephants and lions, he may have encountered in the annual town fair held near his home in Leiden in the Netherlands. Of the six lions he drew, five now belong to museums, including the Louvre in Paris and the British Museum in London. This was the latest remaining lion in private hands. Rubenstein tracked down records in Amsterdam that indicate that lions were featured attractions in fairs in that city in 1644, 1645, and 1648, so the artist could have easily seen and studied them there firsthand. Sotheby's dates its lions to the 1640s. Microsoft's pivotal AI product is running into big problems. Microsoft's Copilot chatbot has become central to its artificial intelligence strategy as the company's close partnership with OpenAI diminishes. But the effort to build it up as a ChatGPT alternative has been tough going. Confusing brand positioning and interoperability problems have frustrated users, current and former employees who have worked on Microsoft's AI product said. Only a small proportion of subscribers to Microsoft's Enterprise Suite use Copilot, and the percentage who favor it over Google's Gemini or other tools has decreased in recent months, according to data reviewed by the Wall Street Journal. The stakes are high for Microsoft because Copilot is core to a push by Chief Executive Satya Nadella to transform Microsoft into an AI-first company, much as he transformed it into a cloud-first company around a decade ago. Copilot is one of Nadella's top priorities, current and former executives said. Microsoft shares tumbled after its earnings report last week sparked investor concern that growth in its most important unit, the Azure cloud computing business, is slowing, and that its AI business is reliant on OpenAI, while Copilot remains unproved. We have moved past the initial phase of discovery of AI, Nadella wrote in December blog post, adding that the industry was entering a phase where we are beginning to distinguish between spectacle and substance. Even if Microsoft is so far lagging behind in the chatbot race, it is still making many billions from AI-driven cloud computing demand, keeping it among the world's most valuable companies. And analysts see the company as well-positioned to close the gap because its productivity software is used by hundreds of millions of corporate users, a captive audience to whom it can easily promote new AI products. Chad A. Morganlander, senior portfolio manager at Microsoft investor Washington Crossing Advisors, said that while Copilot is struggling now, our bet is that they have this embedded client base and that they will get it wrong until they get it right. They have plenty of money for the marathon. Microsoft has several versions of Copilot that are woven into apps and services, including its 365 productivity tools such as PowerPoint and the GitHub developer platform. There is also a consumer-facing version available through its Edge browser and via an app. The different Copilots are divided into three main categories: the enterprise tools of Microsoft sells to companies and professionals, Copilots for developers and IT personnel, and the general consumer chatbot led by Microsoft AI CEO Mustafa Suleiman. Microsoft hired Suleiman in 2024 to oversee its consumer AI products and build AI models that could compete with those of OpenAI and others. So far, Microsoft has relied on OpenAI and its competitor Anthropic to power its various copilots and has said it would use the best models available. Last week, Microsoft reported it had sold 15 million Microsoft 365 Copilot seats. Its Microsoft 365 business has a base of 450 million plus paid seats overall. The company late last year said it had more than 150 million monthly active Copilot users across its first-party platforms. Google's Gemini has more than 650 million monthly users, while ChatGPT has about 900 million weekly active users. Previously unreported data shows that Copilot subscribers, including those with corporate accounts, are increasingly favoring competing options. From last July through late January, the percentage of Copilot subscribers who use the product as a primary option decreased from 18.8% to 11.5%, according to a survey of more than 150,000 respondents in the U.S. by market research firm Recon Analytics. This happened while the share of paid users who chose Google's Gemini as the first option increased from 12.8% to 15.7%. Those surveyed who switched from Copilot say they found better quality elsewhere, with some citing poor user experience and restrictive usage limits. Workers who have access to subscriptions for Copilot, ChatGPT, and Gemini choose ChatGPT and Gemini at a higher rate than Copilot, the Recon data show. Some companies are using only about 10% of the Copilot subscription seats they are paying for, according to a recent note by analysts at Citi Research. Disorganized data silos have been an issue for Copilot, analysts wrote. In an interview, Jared Spartaro, Microsoft's chief marketing officer of AI at Work, said daily active usage of 365 Copilot has grown tenfold year over year and is outpacing growth of other 365 enterprise offerings. Spataro challenged Citi's findings, saying the pace of growth that we're seeing is unlike anything we've seen before, but he declined to provide specific figures. Customer surveys by Microsoft have shown that users have been confused by the multiple versions of Copilot people familiar with the matter said. Some users have long complained about Copilot being forced onto them, popping up on everything from documents to the browser. One issue cited by current and former employees is the lack of a cohesive experience across the different Copilots, a user pain point Nadella has flagged in the past. About a year ago, Nadella sent a frustrated email to Rajesh Jha, Executive Vice President of Experiences and Devices, detailing an incident in which Nadella had asked the enterprise version of Copilot on the Edge browser to help with a public web page he was on, but it couldn't fulfill his prompt, according to people familiar with the email. The issue Nadella raised was resolved, but similar interoperability difficulties persist for users. The effort to train proprietary models has also been hampered by a shortage of computing capacity, with the company rationing server time to ensure availability for OpenAI and other customers of its Azure cloud service. On a number of benchmark tests, Microsoft's flagship proprietary AI model ranks well below competitors. In an interview, Scott Guthrie, Executive Vice President of Microsoft's Cloud and AI Group, noted that Silliman's team was only created in 2024. He said the long timeline involved in building cloud infrastructure explained the team's lack of computing capacity until recently. In its recent earnings report, Microsoft said it was allocating more computing power to improve its Copilot products as it has gained confidence in its ability to monetize them. Whatever you do, don't mess with Pittsburgh's parking chairs. Reserving a spot, illegal in most places, is part of the Steel City's code. Pittsburgh. John Nordquist's wife was about to leave for work, and he wasn't taking any chances. The 52-year-old real estate appraiser had spent 2 hours shoveling snow to clear her parking space, so as soon as she pulled away to meet a cosmetology client, he planted a white plastic folding chair in the middle of the empty spot. "In these extreme situations, you got to stake your claim," said Nordquist, breathing a frozen sigh of relief in the single-digit air. Down the block of working-class homes, more than a dozen chairs of various shapes and vintages were securing their own rectangle of space. A sturdy dining room chair, an office chair on a swivel, two bar stools, a wrought iron patio love seat, an orange plastic lawn chair. In Pittsburgh, it's parking chair season. The city's sacred civic tradition is simple. If you shovel out a spot, you can save it with a chair. Anyone who moves the chair, no matter how long it's been there, to park their own car risks an argument, bodily harm, or a note on their windshield calling them a jag-off, defined by the Oxford English Dictionary as Western Pennsylvania slang for a stupid, irritating, or contemptible person. Corey O'Connor, who occupies Pittsburgh's mayoral seat, put it more politely. "There's a lot of chairs popping up on your streets, so please respect the chair law, or whatever you want to call it, in the neighborhoods," he told reporters last week. O'Connor took some heat when 37 of the city's plows broke down as more than 11 inches of snow buried the city in late January, forcing him to declare a state of emergency. But his latest comments hit a sweet spot in a city experiencing parking chair fever. The unwritten law extends to other household cast-offs spotted curbside, a vacuum cleaner, a green leather ottoman, a toilet, an elliptical machine, an ironing board, and a statue of Jesus with outstretched arms. One Burr, a local social media network, proudly posted a photo of a woman sitting on a plastic folding chair drinking boxed wine after clearing a space. In an interview, Jamie Horvat said she took the wine break after chopping ice for nearly 2 hours for the family Dodge Caravan. Faith Horvat, 15, took the photo that made her mom Yinzer famous. For the record, it was Pinot Noir, and it didn't come from a box, the 42-year-old hairstylist said. When a storm blanketed the nation last month from New Mexico to the Outer Banks, many with little snow removal experience had to fend for themselves. But cities accustomed to blizzards have customs for saving a spot. In Chicago, it's called dibs. Boston sanctions the use of space savers after a declared snow emergency. Still, not everyone is a fan. Don't do it, Baltimore Mayor Brandon Scott warned icily last week. If I see your chair, it's coming with me and going into the trash. One Baltimorean called the mayor's bluff with a photo of a parking space secured by an entire living room set, couch, matching chair, and coffee table, asking, "What you got to say now?" In most cities, it is technically illegal to hold a parking spot, but Pittsburghers haven't seen it that way since at least the 1950s. On the south side slopes, with endless views of snow-dusted rooftops in the city's glass and steel skyline, the recent storm turned narrow roads into snow-lined trenches. In Bloomfield, Sherry McAlexander, 33, helped Deborah Adams, 74, dig out her Hyundai Sonata. Adams attacked the snow on her car roof, and two more neighbors pitched in. McAlexander had just returned from a Starbucks run, during which she guarded her space with a dining room chair. "We are the chair people," Adams declared. The parking chair, like the pierogi, has become a kitschy emblem of Pittsburgh, as comforting as strawberry jello pretzel salad. T-shirts proclaim, "Respect the parking chair." Tiny chairs dangle on Christmas trees beside ersatz Heinz pickles. Tattoos of parking chairs rank in popularity here just after bridges, the Steelers logo, and Heinz ketchup bottles, said Zero, an artist with Kindness Solidarity Design in Greenfield. "It's less obvious, more like, if you know, you know," she said over the rattle of a tattoo machine. John Knapp, 38, a software engineer whose car was snowed in on an unplowed street for a week in Polish Hill, has an angry Curious George setting on parking chair. He jokingly calls the design, next to the one of an exploding porta potty, one of his bad idea tattoos. "You can tell a lot about a street by the type of chairs and how they're placed," said Knapp, who walked 2.5 miles round trip for groceries and beer while his car was entombed. "Maybe there's a deeper meaning tied to the soul of Pittsburgh." Bruce Chan, 41, an urban designer who moved from Los Angeles to Bloomfield 12 years ago, said the parking chair was initially puzzling. Today, he believes it reflects Pittsburghers' enduring respect for hard work. "People have spent a lot of hours digging themselves out," he said. "A lot of tired and sore people that don't want to have to do it every day." As an homage, Chan sculpted a recliner out of snow in front of his house. "After the snow melts, it's all fair game," he said. Cemetery offers to turn loved ones into gardening soil. Brooklyn's Greenwood Cemetery embarks on eco-friendly alternative. There's a looming crisis in America's death industry. Greenwood Cemetery might have found a lifeline. The storied 478-acre Brooklyn burial ground, like many across the U.S., is running out of room for new occupants. With the help of a German entrepreneur, cemetery officials believe they can profitably augment the property by turning loved ones into gardening soil. The process, called natural organic reduction, uses the body's own bacteria to transform human tissue. The dead are placed in a sealed vessel bedded with clover, hay, and straw, and equipped to regulate airflow, temperature, and moisture. Then, nature takes its course. Microbes break down everything but bones, which are ground into the final compost mix. Greenwood's plan is to use the nutrient-rich material to nurture trees, meadows, and the bottom line. It's a way to integrate revenue generation with ecological regeneration, said Joseph Sharap, Vice President of Horticulture at Greenwood. The cemetery plans to start with around 18 composting vessels from Berlin-based startup Meine Erde, translation, My Earth. While similar human compost companies are sprinkled around the U.S., Pablo Metz, the 45-year-old founder of Meine Erde, hopes to spread the practice to more Americans starting in Brooklyn. We're looking at the idea of dedicating certain areas that would be just for these remembrances, said Mira Joshi, cemetery president and a former deputy mayor of New York City. The idea of getting in on the ground floor, especially in a beautiful place like Greenwood, is a little irresistible. Baby boomers in the West's most affluent cohort have been enthusiastic disruptors of cultural norms. As they reach old age, the business of burial is poised for an influx of money and new ideas, including biodegradable coffins and holograms of the deceased to display as digital memorials. In the U.S., 14 states have legalized human composting, starting with Washington in 2019. Parliaments from Germany to Switzerland, Belgium, and the U.K. are considering it. We are confronting death on a scale that we haven't seen before because of the size of the baby boom generation, said Senator Jamie Peterson, majority leader of the Washington State Senate, who shepherded the legislation. Cremation and burial have been the only two options for millennia, Peterson said. Younger generations are expected to demand more personalized death rituals. Around 3 million Americans die each year, a number expected to approach 4 million annually over the next two decades, according to the National Funeral Directors Association, an industry lobbying group. Cremation, which eliminates the cost of embalming and coffins, is used for more than 60% of deaths in the U.S., a share likely to rise to 82% by 2045, according to a survey published in September by the association. Most Americans, 61%, favor environment-friendly burial options, the funeral director's survey found. More families favor simpler, affordable options, according to the survey. Opponents say composting humans is potentially toxic and lacks piety. The funeral home lobby opposed legislation in New York that eventually legalized the process in 2022, citing a lack of government regulations and its potential economic disruption to traditional funeral service providers. The $20 billion a year death industry has long been dominated by the same institutions, funeral homes, cemeteries, crematoria, and religious groups. The U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops has opposed human composting, saying it fails to show proper respect for the body. Human bodies are not household waste, said Dennis Paust, executive director of the New York State Catholic Conference, when opposing the state's legalization. 6 feet under. Greenwood opened in 1838 as one of the first major garden cemeteries in the U.S. It inspired the designers of Central Park and drew hundreds of thousands of visitors each year to stroll and hold picnics. Greenwood entered a period of decline in the post-war era, suffering from vandalism and disrepair. The cemetery has since revived, returning to its roots as a civic hub, offering tours, art displays, concerts, and bird watching. Greenwood officials say human composting will create a new draw to the cemetery. The cost would fall between cremation, as little as a few hundred dollars, and a cemetery burial, which can run $30,000 and more at Greenwood, said Eric Barna, Senior Vice President of Operations. The roots of human composting stretch back only a decade or so. In 2014, Katrina Spade, a trained architect in Seattle, received funding from Echoing Green, a New York nonprofit that promotes social innovation, to develop the idea. The funeral industry hadn't changed much in 100 years, Spade said. Why not offer options in urban centers that would address climate needs? Inspired by the practice of composting livestock, Spade set up a 5-month pilot project with the Soil Science Department at Washington State University. In 2018, Spade worked with Peterson to back legislation allowing the practice. The proposal received bipartisan support and became a law in 2019, drawing national attention. In 20 years in the state Senate, I have never done anything else that received as much coverage outside the state, Peterson said. And that's it for today's edition of the Wall Street Journal. I'm Ken, your volunteer reader here at the Talking Information Center, and I thank you for listening.